The following episode of Focus on Arts was made possible by the Creative Community Scheme funding.
Welcome to this week's Focus on Arts here on Coast Access Radio. I'm Paul Neese, your host for the show. And my guest today is Brent Craig from the Otaki Pottery Club. Welcome, Brent.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. Now, what's your role in the Otaki Pottery Club, Brent?
I'm just a member. I was vice president for 14 years.
All right.
And it looks like I'm going to be elected again.
Oh, dear.
I'm just a member at the moment. Yeah, I'm a tutor.
Yep. Okay. So what are you tutoring?
I tutor wheel. I do the wheel classes for adults.
So pottery wheels we're talking about.
Yeah.
So how did you develop your skills in pottery?
Well, I started back in 1990.
Right.
Looking for pots for bonsai trees. Plastic ones weren't for me, so I asked a neighbour if I could get some real ceramic ones. She said, I'm a tutor, come and join me. And that's how it started.
Ah. And how long ago was that?
1990.
Back in 1990.
It's a while.
An active member of the Otaki Pottery Club ever since.
No. That was in Wellington.
Okay.
I went to Onslow College and learnt there from a couple of tutors. And then about 2011, I suppose, I joined the Otaki Pottery Club.
So is that when you moved up here, or had you been here for a while?
I moved up here. I moved a house on and rebuilt it. A bit of farmland and had a bit of spare time left over.
Just a little.
Just a little.
You keep yourself busy, I know that.
Yeah.
So the Pottery Club was established back in 1989, I believe.
1989, yeah. Otaki College. And it was a result of the government's adult education program. So I began, when I first joined the club, I was tutoring under that program. Mm.
So who were the people that founded the club? How did it start?
Well, I started with Rod Graham was the main mover and groover because he was a teacher, an arts teacher at the college, and put a few bits of pressure on people there, and suddenly got a room, and then suddenly we enlarged, and suddenly we had pottery rooms for ourselves.
Yeah. And funding came via that government grant.
Yeah. And then they withdrew it, and we started doing, the tutors were then contracted to the club.
I read somewhere, though, that the club, well, somebody in the club was involved in adult education programs back in the 70s as well. Is that also
that
correct?
That would have been Rod Graham and Beryl, I can't remember Beryl's last name. Quite a few of the old folks were, yeah, definitely. Beckham was fairly new.
Mm.
Sort of one of those things you just played in the backyard. It wasn't serious.
Yeah, so the bits and pieces of stuff in the 70s. Yeah. Then the opportunity to form a proper club with the grants and adult education came up, and that was in 1989.
Yep.
And you never looked back.
Never looked back. And in 2020, because of the Education Department's restrictions on access to school grounds, for various reasons, we decided we should move. So we went to the Otaki Racecourse, Mary Racecourse, and we bought our own rooms, which is the old Tote building,
right, so
which we call the Tote Modern.
Yeah.
Like the takeoff.
We'll get on to that later.
So that was in 2020.
Yeah. Okay.
And we gutted and rebuilt the interior to suit ourselves, and that's what it is today.
So you must have been fairly financial to be able to do that.
Well, actually, we were lucky. We had the Phillips Family Foundation, mm-hmm. gave us a grant that covered nearly all the costs. And also the Otaki Mary Racing Club were very generous with their time and their patience. So, yeah, we did pretty well out of that.
Excellent. And in 1989, how many people were involved in that initial club then?
I don't know, to be quite honest. I don't know. Okay. I'm not that old. No. I don't know, to be quite honest. I think it was basically a fairly small group, probably about four or five people. Rod Graham, who was the president for quite some time, he's the history main for the club, but mm-hmm. I'm not aware of it.
Okay, but since then it's grown.
Oh, yeah, 200 members.
Yeah, I've read on your website, 200 members.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Which is excellent, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and we've got, 19 classes going with a minimum of 10 in each class.
Yeah.
And that's every week.
And they're all fully subscribed.
Yep, and there's waiting lists for some of the classes.
Right.
It's not bad, eh?
How did you spread the word so that everyone knew and could then flock to the club and
reputation
join up?
Reputation and the modern media, social media is a good thing to do. And the website was updated and made more accessible. And word of mouth. We have people, in my class particularly, we have people coming as far as Shannon and Palmerston North coming and Wellington coming to the classes because it's the only real affordable class they can go to.
So talking about affordability, how affordable is it?
Well, I'm not sure the actual price is, but I can say it's over $200 for a term. And if you are financially embarrassed, we have a way of helping you out with a little grant or whatever. So it doesn't matter what your financial status is, we can help you, if you're keen enough, to take part in a class, encourage you.
And membership's available and open to everybody?
It is indeed, yeah. But you have to do at least a year's tuition. So you're not just going straight into mud and glazes and things, not knowing what you're doing.
No.
So when you're comfortable, because some of the glazes can be a bit toxic, so you have to make sure they've got the right masks on and V events and things like that. So, yeah.
So you need to learn the skills and the safety practices.
It's called OSH.
Yes. Well, very important because you don't want your members to suffer unnecessarily.
No, we don't.
Getting to things they don't understand just yet.
That's exactly right. We're setting fire to the building.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. The building you bought and
that's right.
And invested time and money into.
That's correct.
Yeah. So some of your tutors, just your members, do you have other like professional tutors as well?
We have members who are tutors, and we have some of them have their own galleries or their own studios. And we have Jenny Turnbull, who's been doing pottery for a long time. She does the Otago Polytech New Zealand Diploma of Arts and Design. And she's been doing it for quite a while, so she's a professional tutor.
Yes, she teaches that for the University of Otago, the School of Fine Arts, but she does it from up here. Amazing.
And she's very good at it. She's a very talented lady.
I'm sure she's been doing it for a long time as well.
I think so.
Now, on your website, Brent, it says that the Otaki Pottery Club, and I quote, is the most progressive pottery club in New Zealand.
I would say that.
I thought you might. Why do you say that?
Well, we seem to have always have members wanting to people wanting to apply. We've got a very vibrant sort of group of people who want to run the club, and we encourage public access to our craft by having a public raku every December, which is not for us to make a profit. It's just to get the public involved in picking up a pot, putting a glaze on it. We fire it up right there and then, and they take it home and stick it in grandma's cupboard. And we also have the Festival of Pots and Garden Art, which we run every Wanaka anniversary weekend. And that's gone from small beginnings of maybe 1,000 people to this last one, we had 5,000 people come through over a period of the days we ran it. And it's just grown so big that it's almost embarrassing. But over 60 exhibitors, and people come from all around the country, Napier, Whangarei, the whole lot, to come down and have a visit because it's special.
Flocked Otaki.
Yeah, to Anamkara, which you've got to give a plug for Tim and
yes,
Teresa
indeed.
And Greg,
because
it's their property. We take it over for about, I think it's 4 or 5 days, and we wreck their grounds. And but it's a beautiful bit of land,
yes.
You know, so we enjoy that access.
Yes, it's a great festival.
Oh, hell yeah.
And very, very well known as well.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Yeah. The Kapiti's known for the arts trail, but it's also known for that POTS festival
I think
as
so,
well.
It is, It's just got bigger and bigger and better and better. And the quality of stuff is superb, you know. It's mind-boggling walking around the different displays and thinking, gee, did someone actually make that? God, that's clever, you know. We always get inspired by other people's work.
Absolutely. And the public come along and buy in quantity, I think,
that
don't they
do
as well? Which is really good for the artists. And
it is indeed.
Good for the club too.
Now,
the club is an incorporated society. When did it become incorporated, Brent?
I really can't tell you that. But it was when we started looking at how legal we should be and what the responsibilities might be to the committee and things like that, and they changed it then. I don't know the dates, but I know it's happened.
A good move, though, with such a growing club.
I think so.
Such an active club, too. You need to protect yourself by doing that.
You're dead right.
So that means you have to have a management committee, and you have to have presidents and all those sorts of things. What's the management structure of the club?
Basically, you have your standard president, vice president, treasurer, secretary. And then you have the different team, they call them team leaders. So each person has a role. One's maintenance, one's whatever is required. And they meet once a month and discuss what needs to be done. And they're elected at the annual general meeting.
So you have plenty of people putting their names forward to stand and take the act of...
Not really. You've got to do a bit of a push and a shove.
Yeah.
Because when you think about it, we're potters or artists wanting to enjoy a club. And no one really thinks about how the club is run or where the finances come from. So until you cross over that bridge and they suddenly realise it takes a bit of work, then you get people putting their hands up and saying, yeah, I wouldn't mind. Yeah, I can handle that. Mm.
And it's completely voluntary, all this
work. Completely voluntary, yep. Yeah.
A good way to do it, but sometimes can be hard. Some clubs struggle finding people to do it.
It can be a hard struggle, but we've got a full committee, so it's not really a drama.
Right. Now, on your website, again, all the classes that you have, I counted 12, going from bonsai, which you've already mentioned, to pit firing, garden orbs, lithography.
Yeah. They're just the guest artists.
So so how does all that work?
Well, we normally try and get a guest artist, is Fiona Tunnicliffe and a few others I can't name. We get them in and they run a weekend course or a weekend class and show us how to make something really special. And they're bloody clever people, whoever they are. And then you've got the classes themselves, which are basically hand builders. There's beginners, intermediate, senior. And then you've got wheel classes, and do the same thing again. And the different hours of the night, the different hours of the day, totaled 19 classes. And on top of that, we have a school program going for homeschooling kids, and we have a after school program going for 8 to 18 year olds, and we have a holiday program for kids also. So it gets quite big, quite busy, and all done by volunteers.
Yeah. So basically, that must mean that your premises are used every day.
Oh, yes. It's a magic place. It really is. You walk in the door by the Tote Gallery, and you've got all the displays of really classy stuff, because once a month we have an artist and we have a potter, and then you go into the classrooms, which are directly to your right. You have the wheel going, and you've got the handbuild going, and straight in front of you are the members' area with the glazing room behind and the kiln room at the other far end, and then the meeting room. So it's a pretty busy place.
So how many people can it accommodate at any one time?
Oh,
lots.
we've had seminars with maybe up to 100 people. We find the plastic chairs from somewhere and it's a go.
The Tote Modern Gallery.
Yep.
Who thought of that name?
I'm not sure who did care of that, but when they did, we thought it was a bloody good idea.
It's very, very clever.
Yeah, it's very clever, yeah.
A play on the Tate Modern Gallery or galleries in the UK, in London.
That's the one, yeah. Although we wouldn't admit to that, of course, in case we get sued.
Of course. And, of course, it's in the old Tote building, so an obvious sort of name for it.
But it started off with just the members doing their thing, and it was okay. And then we started having guest artists and guest painters. And so suddenly the quality's gone up to such an extent where we're getting people from all around the country coming to visit the Tote, which is open Thursday to Sundays, 10 until 3. And, some real classy stuff in there at the moment. There's some really nice stuff. Opened last night. I can't think of the name of the artist, but it's worth a visit, well and truly worth a visit.
Right. So it's one of your local club members or a visiting artist?
One is a club member, one is an artist from Wellington.
So artists from across the country want to exhibit at the Tote?
Yeah, exactly. We don't have any trouble finding somebody to put their stuff in there. Mm.
How far ahead do you have to organise the exhibitions?
Oh, 12 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a waiting list basically to get in there. I've done it a couple of times and it's a magic sensation. You have the opening night, everybody's around there rushing to try and get the best pot.
It's a race to get that red sticker on the pot.
Red sticker on the pot, and it's got to stay there for a month, so you've got to twitch and carry on until such time as you
get
it.
You've got to keep coming in to look at your pot before it actually becomes yours and you can take it home.
Yeah, and then I get the invoice and think, wow, I did all right, didn't I?
Yeah. Now, there's also very soon the Star Glaze Festival. Tell us in detail about what that's all about.
I can't give too much detail, but I know it's Matariki.
Yes, of course.
Celebrating that. So it starts at the Ōtaki Mary Racecourse grounds in their main building underneath. We'd start with a greeting, acknowledging what's going on, and then it runs for the weekend.
2 days, over the whole weekend.
2 days, yeah. And there's probably about a good 20-odd exhibitors. And, it's a great celebration.
So that's on Friday the 10th of July and Saturday the 11th. Two full days of it.
Yeah.
Again, it's all run by the volunteers in the club.
Exactly, yeah.
It's
So it's a fundraiser along with the Festival of Pots, and that's how we manage our building.
Mm-hmm. So that's where the income comes from to keep the building in good nick and
it keeps our subscriptions down.
Right, right. So what are the subscriptions?
Good question. $200 if you pay on time.
Right, I think you mentioned that earlier. Yeah. An investment, but it's a good investment, to be able to take part in all the things that the club does.
Yeah, and then, of course, you've got the Cabaret Arts Trail. A plug for me now.
Okay. plug away.
I've had such a successful year selling stuff that I will not be on the trail this year. I've been on it for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
so it's always been a lot of fun. But I'm also building, it'll be open soon, my new studio and gallery for Awatea Pottery.
Okay.
That's me.
That's you.
That's me, Hatfield Road.
Going out on your own.
No, well, I'm just doing what I've always wanted to do. Yeah. Have a space of my own to do my thing. But, the Arts Trail and the Festival of Pots have always been my money earner.
And you're retired from paid employment.
I am indeed.
To give you time to do all this wonderful stuff for the pottery.
Yeah, we'll see. A little bit of farmland, and of course, if it's a rainy day, what do? I make pots. If it's a fine day, I'm out chasing animals and doing fences and things. So, yeah, it keeps me busy.
Yeah, so life is full post-retirement.
Hell yeah.
Out of interest, what did you do before you retired?
I was a policeman for 34 years.
And that's pretty full on as well.
It was indeed, yeah.
So you haven't slowed down one little bit,
not
Brent?
Not a bit, no. I like being involved.
Yeah. So if people would like to join the club, people who aren't already members.
Go to the website.
Best way is to go to the website.
The website's a very easy to follow website. It gives you a list of classes, it gives you a list of requirements and the costs involved.
Right, and go from there.
Yeah, dead right. We'd love to see you.
Try out a few things, come along and...
Oh, where else can you play with mud, water and fire and and make something?
Yeah. It just occurred to me, pottery gets fired in kilns. You have your own kiln or do you use others? You have your own?
I have my own kiln.
You do, yeah.
But the club has three electric kilns and two gas kilns. And we have a whole lot of raku kilns as well. So the firings are going 24/7 for the electric kilns and once a month for the gas kilns. That's a different style of glaze colours and things. So pretty busy.
Extremely busy, I would say.
Yeah.
Incredibly busy.
And when you think about it, pottery's been around for so blooming long. If you watch the Time Team programme on TV, the way they date the different eras of society going back to the Neolithic age is by digging up bits of pot. So they've been using pots for carrying things around for millions of years.
And millions of years ahead, maybe. We won't know about that.
But 3D print by AI.
Yeah, so what's the future for pottery, do you think?
Oh, it'll always be there.
We've got AI, as you said, 3D printing.
Yeah. There'll always be someone wanting to use their hands to make something that's theirs. You know, when you see someone who's made from an ashtray to an actual bowl, the look on their face is just—it's just ear-to-ear smiles, and they dance around. You know, it's the magic thing of being a tutor. They all 10 people arrive, some with great ambitions of making dinner sets. Why am I laughing? but of each class, there's normally about 3 or 4 that are really gifted and just take to it. There'll be those to struggle, but there's always those 3 or 4, and you think, wow, they've got talent, and away they go.
So some people find it really easy to learn.
Yeah.
Other people take more time.
They do.
The ones that struggle, do they get it in the end?
Most of them do. Mm. It's a very much a hands-on tutor thing. I try to leave them to do their own thing, but in the end, they end up interfering. And they'll always end up in a class of having at least a couple of bowls that they've made, full stop.
Yeah. So there'll always be something they can take home.
And some realise that they haven't got it. There's always those few that really, and some of them turn out really gifted potters.
Yeah.
Beautiful stuff.
So I would guess someone would have to have a feel for it through their hands, basically, because you're manipulating clay and materials.
You are.
So you have to be able to feel what you're doing and
you've got it.
Sort of feel how the pot's rising up from the wheel if you're doing it on a wheel.
Understanding what the clay's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that can only be done by that touch.
Yeah, because you got it. Yep.
Yeah.
By your hands.
Yeah. So it's a very tactile.
You got it. Thing. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And that you find that really satisfying?
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah, I can lose myself. I go through a bag of clay and make, I don't know, 4 or 5 platters and a couple of bowls in the morning, and it's just a great feeling. You're into the zone.
So everything else disappears from your mind?
I started doing it when I was a policeman.
Right.
And it was a good way for spending 2 or 3 hours a week doing something. It didn't relate to any of the drama that we were having at work. And, I just loved it.
Enabled you to switch off
yep.
from work completely yep. and switch off from whatever was happening
it was
around
my
you.
Time.
Yeah.
Same with my class. A lot of the people that come to my class are mums who have dropped the kids off at kindy
mm-hmm.
and they've got 2 hours themselves. And that's special.
The other thing about making pots from hand as opposed to AI or 3D printing, those sort of things, the product, if you like, is absolutely perfect.
Yep.
But with pots, not necessarily so. No. So how important are imperfections in pottery?
They really are important. If you go to the warehouse or one of those places and buy your mug or your plate or whatever, you run your thumb over the inside and your pointing finger on the outside. If it's thick at the base and it's got ripples all the way to the top, it's handmade. If you put your hand in it, it's the same thickness all the way through. It's been made by a mould in a factory.
Mm. So you can feel the difference.
You can feel the difference.
And it's much more satisfying,
oh, yeah.
the handmade feel, oh, yeah. than the machine.
And sometimes the point of difference is all that matters.
Yeah.
You know, a little crack or a little bubble or whatever, it's been handmade.
So do you deliberately make mistakes sometimes?
Yep.
And leave them there?
Yep.
Okay.
Sometimes they're artistic. Sometimes they're not. No, sometimes you've got a tear in the clay, you put a few boot laces over it, looks like it's been sewed together, and it's a work of art.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Thing, it's a work of art, that's the thing that's important.
It's the point of difference. Yours is a different plate from everything else you can yeah. buy. I want it.
Unique, one-off.
You got it.
Yeah. As opposed to the dinner sets you can buy that are all the same, and thousands of people can have them.
The hardest thing is trying to price it.
Yeah,
because you go into say Briscoe's and you buy a plate there for $90. It's a big round white plate. It looks nice, but then you get someone making a plate which has got colours and designs and things all over it. You couldn't sell it for $90. It doesn't even cover the cost of the clay and the firing.
No.
So you pay your extra money, you get something special.
Yeah. And there's a good market. Oh, obviously, there's a good market out there for it because you have these festivals and people come along and part with their money quite happily.
It's incredible, the amount of stuff going out the door.
Mm.
You know, on the first day of the festival pots this year, it was pouring with rain like it is now, and people were queued up outside under their umbrellas. 1,000 people went through.
Mm.
Unreal. And they all bought something. No one went home empty.
Mm.
So,
that people come from all around to buy at the festival.
It's special.
Yeah. So just to reiterate, if people want to become involved with the club or join the club and try out some of these classes and try to make a bowl or an ashtray or whatever, they can go on your website.
Go to the website.
There's a form in there. You can email the club, and I know because I did that just to get you in to come and talk to me.
It's very user-friendly.
Yeah, it's very user-friendly, and the club people always get back to you.
Yep.
So do that. Get involved.
Yep.
Try and make a pot. You never know.
Go for it.
You might
be limited by your imagination.
Yep, you might be a wonderful potter. Thanks, Brent. It's been great talking to you, and I wish the club all the very best for the future. I've been talking to Brent Craig from the Otaki Pottery Club. And don't forget, you can visit the Tote Modern Art Gallery in Otaki from Thursday until Sunday between the hours of 10 and 3. And over Matariki, there is the club's Star Glaze Festival. It's a 2-day event, Friday the 10th of July and Saturday the 11th. Details are on the club website. And that's Focus on Arts for this week.
This program was produced at and first aired on Coast Access Radio, supported by Erirangi Te Motu, New Zealand On Air. You can listen back to this and other programs on your favourite podcast platform.